Hello and welcome to It's No Secret. I'm Kat.
And I'm Christine.
And today on the show, we are tackling the topic of, is DIY investing your KiwiSaver something that you should consider doing? Now, this is going to try and be a really balanced conversation. And I say that because for any listeners of the show that have heard us speak about investing or KiwiSaver before, they'd probably know that we are really big fans of passive investing, index funds, ETFs, all those kinds of like really well-diversified investments, and not so much going down the path of do-it-yourself stock picking. But keeping it timely and keeping it relevant, there is a new KiwiSaver scheme coming out soon from our lovely friends at Sharesies, and they are offering New Zealanders the option to DIY their KiwiSaver. So we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of that. But before I kick it off, Christine, you're looking at me with a smile on your face. What are your original thoughts? I mean, well, maybe we'll just set the scene of, okay, what can people currently do in KiwiSaver? Like, what do we sort of know?
So, I mean, my first thought was, I can't wait to see how this episode goes. And what can people currently do? So I guess the common approach to KiwiSaver and what most other providers have is you've got kind of standardized funds that you can choose from that range from conservative to growth or high growth. So depending on your risk profile and how close to either buying a home or retirement you are, you would adjust your funds as you kind of head towards those. But historically hasn't been the option to DIY, i.e. choose individual stocks as part of your KiwiSaver in New Zealand.
Yeah. Or even choose multiple funds. Like, that's the other thing, right? I guess so. You're right in saying that the consideration set for most KiwiSaver schemes is pretty limited, or has historically been quite limited. You're not, you know, necessarily presented with the option of 50 different funds. You might only have like five. And so then you pick one to invest in, and maybe you'll shift that over time based on your life changes or as you approach retirement, those sorts of things. So yeah, I would say overall a very kind of, as far as investing goes, relatively easy mindset choice, right? Like low consideration set in terms of decision points, not necessarily a lot of engagement required. We know from looking at the stats that people are not super engaged with their KiwiSaver necessarily. Particularly, funnily enough, someone was telling me today that Gen Z is becoming increasingly disconnected with their KiwiSaver, which I thought was interesting given that we know that that's likely to be one of their largest assets at retirement.
For sure.
In terms of your overall asset base. So that's an interesting side note. But yeah, I guess different kind of consideration set. So what we're talking about here is something at the polar opposite end of potentially world's your oyster. That's not going to be the probability or the option from the get-go. But yeah, the opportunity will be much larger than, say, choosing from five different funds.
Yeah, definitely.
How are you feeling about it? Any initial thoughts? When you say, think about your own KiwiSaver in retirement, how do you feel about approaching it?
My personal KiwiSaver or just,
like, do you want to spend time thinking about it on the weekends? Is it a set and forget? Like, what's your vibe?
No.
Okay.
Hell no. I think the nature of that investment is very long term.
Yeah.
Unless you are buying your house in the next 1 to 3 to 5 years, really. Yeah. And so I think personally there's an element of engagement that needs to happen with regards to checking in on your KiwiSaver every year if you're a freelancer or, you know,
making sure you've met the contributions.
Yeah, aren't a salaried employee. Yeah, you need to be checking that you are kind of at least contributing, is it $500? Around about that amount every year?
Yeah, 521, I think.
Yeah, because then you get free money. But then there's also the, like,
Maybe it's $1,000 to get 521.
Yeah, I think that sounds about
right. Yeah, that sounds right. Don't fact check this. Yeah. I mean, do. Contributing enough to get the government contribution.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think there's, you know, you do need to be engaged as you move closer towards those different goals to understand what your kind of plan is around the fund type. But then there's a contribution rate as well, right?
Yeah.
In terms of, do you want to be contributing more or less, and how much of a percentage are you contributing to your retirement in your KiwiSaver buying the first home?
Interesting.
And as a total percentage of your portfolio, i.e., you know, 3% is not going to get you to like enough money to live off, in my opinion.
Yeah. You've raised a really interesting point that I haven't thought about, given this episode is very unstructured, but we're going to talk about it anyway. So apologies for the listener if we take some left-hand turns here.
Yeah.
But I think one thing that I guess you've really nicely raised there are already other consideration points that one needs to make as an individual about their KiwiSaver, right, outside of how that money is invested. Mm. So that is, what's your contribution rate? Are you actively contributing above and beyond, you know, your employer contribution? Are you making personal contributions? Is it for a house purchase? Is it for retirement?
Yeah.
What does that look like? That, like, they're decisions that you need to think through first before you even go down the path of then choosing what the underlying investment is. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's already a bit of a, I guess, mental barrier or mental hurdle to overcome with those decisions.
Yeah.
And then choosing the investments. So for people that don't know, maybe let's just get into some of the nitty-gritty about what the Sharesies QSEver scheme will offer based on the announcements they've made to date, and then we can kind of talk through pros and cons and maybe play devil's advocate and be like, this could be really good for people. Let's just find out. So in short, what Sharesies have come out with is they're going to offer a KiwiSaver fund or a KiwiSaver scheme that will have basically some base funds. So what they're kind of calling base funds, which I guess is equivalent to what we just talked about at the start, right? Of, you know, I think there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yep, 5 base funds here, which is your like lower set. So it's things that are conservative funds through to like some growth funds. Mm. So that whole kind of spectrum. Everyone in the scheme will be required to invest at least 50% of their portfolio, so 50% of the amount that they have in their KiwiSaver, into a base fund of their choice. Some people may want to only invest in base funds, and that's okay too. But if you then want to go down the DIY path, you have the option to self-select, or what they're calling like self-select, the other 50%. Now, there are some rules. They've tried to put some like guardrails around what that self-select portion looks like. Mm-hmm. Do you know why? I'm just going to throw you in the deep end, Christine. Do you know why they would have had to set some rules?
I'm going to hazard a guess and say that, I mean, KiwiSaver schemes are kind of regulated, right? And So I don't think it's responsible of the government or the regulatory
FMA.
To let Kiwis gamble their retirement savings away. So it has to be capped at a certain percentage, like, it's like 1-5% per stock within that 50%, right?
Yeah, I think it's a 5% cap. So yeah, you're kind of bang on with that. I mean, reading through the lines here, I'm guessing that given this was one of the first kind of publicly available schemes, or will be a publicly available scheme of its kind, and they would have had to go through all the regulatory processes like we have with the FMA. Presumably there was some feedback and concerns from the FMA about people just jumping on board and putting all of their KiwiSaver in like a penny stock, right? Yeah. And having access, which is concerning.
Yes, it is.
Particularly because it's like, you know, people can have KiwiSaver when they're under 18, or they can have KiwiSaver for the first time when they start earning a material amount of money in their like post-uni world or first major job. And it's really challenging to expect people of that age and stage to make really solid financial decisions that are going to benefit them when they're 65. And that's what you're asking people to do. So
completely
can totally see why there's some guardrails. So what I guess the guardrails are is within the, so 50% self-select can only be 50% of your balance. Within that portion, initially there's going to be a limited option of shares that people can choose from. So I think initially it's just going to be some of the New Zealand Stock Exchange. They're not going to expand it to the US and the other markets that they have access to right now for like invest, but I imagine that that's probably on the product roadmap. And you can choose individual companies or exchange traded funds. But for any one of those individual investment options, there is a cap of 5% to any single share or ETF. So let's say you had 50% in a base fund, and then you have to allocate the other 50% to self-select. You'd have to be picking a minimum of 10. Well, sorry, maximum of 10.
Mm.
No, minimum of 10.
Yeah.
Oh my God, my maths is terrible. Guys. This is the raw, unedited version of Captain Christine.
Of my five?
No, yes. Yeah. You have to be picking a minimum of 10 because the cap is 5%. Oh, I haven't eaten lunch today. That was a terrible idea.
It's a Tuesday.
You have to be picking a minimum of 10 options in addition to picking your base fund. So you're picking, let's say, 11 investments at a minimum if you want to go down that path. Potentially less if you allocate more to the base fund, right? And then you just want to pick, say, 2 stocks. Mm-hmm. You could obviously do that as well. Mm. But there is, I would say, with that, more effort required in terms of mental load, research, comfort around asset allocation, all of those types of things to decide what your portfolio looks like, as opposed to just picking, say, 1 of 5 or 10 funds. That's the options. There are, of course, then fees involved. So I think that's, you know, another thing that's like worthwhile talking about, because the FMA really strongly batted into everyone a couple of years ago that like fees are super important, particularly in KiwiSaver. You need to know what you're paying. And I think that was mostly because there are a lot of fund managers out there that are still paying or charging outrageous fees, like some of them even over 2%, which is just highway robbery. So there's that. But then also knowing, I guess, your transaction fees, right? So yeah, the overall fees, roughly speaking, on this proposed scheme is that the base funds would have their own fees, like, you know, Simplicity has their fees, Kernel has their fees within their funds on their KiwiSaver schemes. But then if you go down the path of the self-select option, you have to pay two different types of fees. One is an administration fee. So let's just play that out. I'm guessing it's the administration fee would be on the value of your total portfolio that is invested in the self-select option, and that's 0.15%, probably to cover the things like additional reporting and tax and compliance obligations that Sharesies would have to enable you to have that DIY option. And then on top of that, there is a transaction fee for self-select investments. And this is a transaction fee of 1% up to investments of $1,000, and then it reduces. But where this will really apply to people is all of us have regular investments going into KiwiSaver if we are regularly working and contributing. And so that transaction fee would apply every time your employer or you as an individual make a contribution to your KiwiSaver fund into the self-select portion. That's kind of, I guess, the nitty-gritty details. I mean, on the other thing that I can see right now in this lovely fact sheet I've got from them is that you have to be over 18, so they're not going to offer this up to kids at this point, which probably makes sense because, I mean, again, like, talk to any parent and they're like, how did your, like, 15-year-old choose what they wanted to invest in? And they're like, oh, they see Teslas and they love Tesla, so they just bought Tesla. Like, okay, cool. Yeah. Maybe okay to put some pocket money towards, but not necessarily your entire retirement savings. Granted, they probably don't have much retirement savings at 15, but still, it's the, like, premise and the behaviour. And, yeah, and then everything else kind of seems to be fairly stock standard in terms of understanding how KiwiSaver schemes work. But this is different. One of the things that I guess Sharesies have, like, pitched about why this is a good thing is that there's only two existing self-select kind of schemes out there in New Zealand at the moment, as you kind of talked about at the start, and they're only open to high net worth individuals or they're done through an advisor. So we have chatted on the show before about you obviously have more options that open up to you if you try and get portfolio management or KiwiSaver management done through a financial advisor, because the universe that they can access is a little bit more flexible because they're professionals and they're paid to do that, and that kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. What I guess Sharesies are trying to do here is bring that same type of experience back into the hand of the everyday investor. And to kick us off on the debate about whether or not this is a good thing, I'm just going to channel my inner positive Polly and be like, well, Christine, does anyone really care about my retirement savings as much as I do? And therefore, should I not just manage it myself? Christine's looking at me like stunned. This is, like, not my usual.
Where do I start?
I mean, but that's a starting point of thought process, right? Yeah. No one cares about how much money I have to retire more than me. So why should I not just manage my money myself?
Well, firstly, you are not a financial expert. You're correct. An everyday person.
I am.
And do you really have that much knowledge? Or actually the resources behind you?
I don't have any time.
So, you know, like, you could even liken it to the active versus passive debate of active fund managers. They have teams of researchers behind their choices and stocks.
Well, analysts. Yeah. They've got Bloomberg. They've got PhDs. They've got all sorts of things. They've got limited resources and money in some ways.
Do you have that as an individual?
I do not.
Okay.
I also have a child and she
and
takes up
super busy
a lot of my time, and I have a job that also takes up a lot of my time.
Yeah.
To be honest, when I think about this, the number one thing I think of is, even if I felt I had the knowledge and I felt I could find the time, I think the fall down for me would be not being able to take action in a timely manner when it really needed to happen, and being too responsible for the outcome in ways that I perhaps couldn't foresee at the start. And this can be probably really well exampled by a headline that came out recently about the FMA published the KiwiSaver Value for Money report, which basically reported that, you know, during COVID, which they made a lot of, like, headlines about, $1.2 billion was moved from higher growth funds into conservative funds in the KiwiSaver realm. And that was obviously concerning because a lot of people did that as the market or after the market had already fallen. Now, what has happened since, and this is what tends to happen, is people sit on the sidelines or they get busy. They live their lives. They don't know when the right time is to change back. And so since that happened at basically the height of, like, the market crash in early 2020, of $1.2 billion, only $121 million, meaning about $1 billion has not been moved back into higher growth funds. So only 121 million has since gone back into higher growth funds, and about $1 billion is still sitting in conservative funds. Mm-hmm. And if you think about where the market is at, sure, it's been very choppy since like in the last 12 months, but it's up in comparison to where we were in the lows of 2020. And if you've missed mm-hmm. that whole wave because you're the person that needs to make that choice, mm-hmm. that's what terrifies me. That's what mm-hmm. that's actually what would stop me, I think, from ever
using it,
going down the path of very strong DIY. Because this just says to me, if people are already challenged in making choices around investments when they're just switching between one fund and another fund, how much harder is that going to get if you're also considering a fund plus potentially like 10 stocks or 10 ETFs?
Also, what happens if you decide to go down the route of choosing, let's say, 50% in a fund and then 50% in individual stocks? How do you switch providers? Because if you're moving from something
great
that's...
Great question. I'd actually not even thought about that.
Because do you, like, if there's no other alternative in the market, how do you go like for like to something else?
Yeah.
You or can't how do you really. Transfer in as well?
Yeah. Well, I guess you just transfer in and just say, I'm going to try a different strategy and then... Mm. You know, if you decided that you did that for a little bit and felt like it wasn't the right option for you, you'd just have to sell out of all of those and move back into probably what's more like, for standardized. Lack of a better word, a traditional option.
Yeah.
Mm. But yeah, but it's that, it's the pressure of having to make the right choice that puts me off.
Yeah. I really think just the sheer magnitude of making such a decision when you're so young, that feels really scary because I don't really trust myself in the same way that you've talked about to be the person to make that decision.
Yep.
I think when it is in a standardized fund, it feels less intimidating because also this isn't really how you should make your decisions, but a lot of people around you will also be doing a similar thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're generally going to get a similar return.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on
that.
Well,
now that you've mentioned returns, this is a great second point because I guess one of the challenges with this kind of option is how do you benchmark? How do you know that you're successful? And, you know, to again, so be true. Devil's advocate, like some people that go down this DIY path may be amazing at it. I don't know. Maybe you are really well researched or you're just really lucky. Like whatever happens, maybe you're really good at it. But how do you actually cross-check your level of success versus what is happening? And that's something that I'd be really fascinated to see because my understanding is if people have the self-select option, Sharesies is going to need to report on what's called the risk indicator, so that little number bar from 1 to 7 on each individual portfolio, so they can give you kind of like a personalized view of your portfolio's risk level. But then
that's
going to
be huge resources for them.
Yeah, it would be a giant tech build, I imagine.
Wow.
Quick side note. But then in addition to that, I'm like, well, how do you potentially actually like educate and inform people? And one of the best ways to do that would be to give them like applicable benchmarks or appropriate benchmarks so they can see whether their 10 stocks or 10 ETFs is actually the choice that's delivering them on, you know, a higher growth return for their goals. I don't know how they're going to answer that problem either.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for
that. Anyone at Sharesies want to write into the show? Tell us what your product team's working on.
I have some questions though, generally.
Yeah.
So as we've spoken, the first thing that came into my mind was thinking about how do you like picking the approach that you take to actually deciding which individual funds are going to be the ones that you choose, because we talk a lot about core satellite as an investing strategy. So in theory, you could apply that to your KiwiSaver and then
you could do like an 80% base fund and then do 20% of your asset allocation to like some satellite picks and then maybe just focus on choosing those satellite picks. And I think that could definitely work for some people. I guess the comments that we've already talked about around, you know, needing additional time, research, just having perhaps more of a like mental load in that space, not knowing what your benchmark is, not knowing when to maybe sell out of one of those satellite picks. Like we see that all the time, right? Of people, you know, that are successful in the stock picking realm, obviously have often have really good basis for why they invested in an individual company for the first place. But because they're not financial professionals or they don't have a goal in mind in terms of, you know, what would warrant them to sell out of that investment and maybe move into another investment, they tend to just hold on to them for forever and a day. And that's not what professional fund managers are doing, right? They have, we've talked about this before, they have like sell criteria and buy criteria. I would say that most, you know, DIY investors don't have sell criteria in their minds. other than like, oh God, I'm panicking?
Well, it's so much easier to attach to the emotional outcome if you're doing it yourself, right, as well. And then I was thinking about the idea of call satellite. Let's say you apply that to your KiwiSaver, but then you zoom out and you're like, okay, well, how does that fit? How does KiwiSaver fit in my total portfolio of assets? Mm. And like, should that be a part of the core, not the satellite?
Great question. Yeah, absolutely. And potentially it should, particularly if, you know, for anyone kind of under the age of 30 listening to this, like chances are KiwiSaver will be one of your largest, if not your largest asset, you know, depending on your home ownership place or where you get to with home ownership, will be at retirement. So yeah, absolutely. Like there is a lot of, I guess, validity in keeping your KiwiSaver a core investment for those reasons so that it can just tick along and track up to what it needs to be for when you need to access that money. And then you, you know, play around the edges with satellite investments outside of a KiwiSaver zone for sure.
Mm. And I was just thinking, for anyone who doesn't know what a core satellite investing strategy is,
refer to an earlier episode or the Kernel blog.
Yeah, or we can tell you right now.
Just refer to the Kernel blog. Yeah. Google core satellite Kernel.
Yeah, there you go.
Kernel with a K. New favorite tagline.
Yeah.
Okay, so other devil's advocate question that I'm being positive poly is, okay, well, Christine, like they have DIY KiwiSavers in Australia. So why can't we have that here? They seem to be successful at having it over there.
Because I feel like you should answer this question.
Well, give me your gut. What's your gut feel on that?
Well, the gut feel is Australia does finance better, and there's probably a really good reason for that in terms of, and I feel like we've spoken about this in passing before, in that the reason that it exists in Australia is to for higher like
net people worth individuals.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's about, isn't it about bringing lump sums into the super versus
realm?
Yeah.
Yep.
Versus having that ability as an everyday investor.
Yeah. I think it's a good question, and I can kind of see the argument as to why people think that like, oh, these types of schemes work overseas in other countries, and so we should all have, you know, DIY options available. But to just translate that argument into saying like what they have in Australia is the same as what we're going to have here is not true, because the reason that a self-managed super scheme in Australia exists is more of a structural and tax like benefit to the individual, as opposed to saying this exists so that you can pick your individual investment. And so it's just not the same argument. And it's like, again, you look at some of the numbers and you're right about the whole demographic piece as well, because if you look at, you know, kind of the traditional self-managed super members or people that do that in Australia, and I believe that the median age of this is right. Yep. So the median age of people that have self-managed super in Australia is 61. So quite a different demographic to, say, those of us that are in our 20s and 30s. The regulator in Australia recommends to people that they don't consider a self-managed super scheme unless they have a minimum of $500,000 per member.
Yeah.
Right? And the other thing that's different with those schemes is people traditionally set them up as a family unit. So you would have like the Emerson Family Super Fund, and like Luke would be a member, I would be a member, Lily would be a member when she starts contributing. We would each have our own balances. It would have its own reporting. Like there would be tracking. So it's also a family planning, estate planning, like asset management tool, as opposed to just saying, Kat really knows a lot about finance, so she's going to open a self-managed super scheme and pick all the best stocks. Because FYI, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't pick any good stocks. That'd be terrible.
Why does the amount of money matter? Is that purely for tax reasons?
It's mostly because there is a little bit more overhead and compliance burden. Yeah. So I think partially that's driven by the cost of being more direct, which is why if you look at, you know, the two schemes that currently offer people that DIY thing, there is a threshold of you either need to be considered a wholesale investor or you need to go through a financial advisor, because there is actually more administrative cost and probably compliance around giving people that level of flexibility as opposed to the standard, you know. When I came here and I was like, okay, I can enroll, I think at the time in Simplicity, and I had like four options from my KiwiSaver, I'm like, this feels a little simplistic, but I'm not mad about it.
Yeah.
Like I haven't been disadvantaged because that was the choice forced on me at the time. In Australia, we still have superannuation over there. And yes, we do have more fund choices. But again, like that hasn't benefited me in any way more than what the options that have been made in the KiwiSaver scheme being a bit more simplistic have here, if that makes sense. So yeah. Any other thoughts on this general topic?
I I'm really stuck on the transaction fees.
Yeah.
And having that's it a big be one. Yeah, and having it be an expense that is that you pay as the employee contributing, and also you pay when your employer contributes, so you're getting double, you're hit twice. And they've got the threshold of it being up to 1,000 and then or over that, and the price changes. But
yeah,
you know, speaking for me, who is, you know, I don't earn badly at all, which is very fortunate, but I also, like, I'm going to hit under $1,000 every time.
Pretty much every time.
Yeah. And like to get over $1,000 to then be able to take advantage of that cost saving.
There's not many people that are on salaries that would be part of this scheme that are going to be having their fortnightly or monthly contributions being more than $1,000.
Yeah, exactly. And so I guess it comes back to that kind of be very aware of all of the costs associated with what you're investing in, and for your homework and dig into the detail, because it is really worth it, and try and try to add up what that number means, like a percentage, turn it into a number and add it all together so that you can understand how much am I paying per contribution or per month.
Yep. So I'm just doing a little rough calculation to see what mine would be. So because, you know, people get really hung up on the kind of like nitty gritty, right? So there are other providers out there that may have an admin fee, right? I think there are still a number of, you know, we at Kernel don't have an admin fee on our KiwiSaver plan, but there are some providers that do have an admin fee because FYI, there are overhead costs. We've got to do tax reporting and administration and accounting and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess this is probably in lieu of an admin fee. So if people wanted to do a price comparison to kind of self-assess whether or not this is something for them, I reckon the easiest way to do it is you just go to pay.net.nz, chuck your yearly salary in there, make sure you tick the right percentage for KiwiSaver that you're currently contributing, go down to your payment frequency. So let's say it's like fortnightly or monthly. It'll break down how much from your salary you're getting paid on that basis into KiwiSaver. And then you could see that, yes, that's probably less than $1,000 a time. Therefore, you just times that amount by 1%. That's the fee that would be charged off that contribution every time it goes in if you're putting that whole amount into the self-select. And then you can kind of make an easy comparison that way. Because I just also think about, I'm like, we struggle so much to make really easy fee comparison calculators here at work. And I'm like, this is already quite complex.
Yeah.
But there will be really people, there will be people that need to get into the nitty gritty to see whether or not switching into this from a cost point of view is going to be a consideration point. Because the other thing on that is looking at the underlying fees of the base funds. They range between, I believe it's about 0.5 and 1.5%, because it's a mix of some index-based funds and some actively managed funds. So in terms of overall market comparison, that's sort of in the middle, but they're certainly not the lowest in terms of, you know, that base fund fee.
Yeah. Yeah, nice.
So yeah. What would prompt you to want to have this level of control? Would anything that I ever say to you sell you on it? Or do you think it's just not in your wheelhouse?
I think, probably not. I would never do it, to be completely honest, because I just...
You've picked stocks before.
Yeah, but they're all down 80%. Like, let's be real.
I tried that. I experimented.
Yeah.
It's not in my future.
And I'm happy to put numbers to this. Like, I invested $6,000 into two stocks, and it's currently worth $1,000.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty terrifying.
That doesn't fill you with confidence, right?
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Okay, what if, again, playing devil's advocate, I was like, but Christine, you've got another 30 years. They'll bounce back.
No, they won't, because I didn't do any research, really, to invest in them.
Also, three stocks, not very well diversified, so chances of, like, a significant impact because one of them don't do well, very high.
Yeah, and, like, I'm going to make myself sound like a terrible investor. This was me 3 years ago. I literally had an experience with a, like, related company in New Zealand in the same industry where I was like, oh, my God, this is the future, blah, blah, blah. Found something on the US stock exchange. I was like, I'm going to buy it. No idea of, like, the company financials, anything. But I think that if you are if you opt out of KiwiSaver completely because you want to kind of, you know.
That's a good angle I hadn't thought of. You just want more control, maybe a little bit of distrust of the system.
Yep, exactly.
Having this level of control would be better for you. That is a potential possibility. I see it.
Yeah. So if you were, like, taking to
and hey, being opted in and into something is better than disengaging entirely, in our view, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
Okay.
That's the only things I can think of.
Nice.
Personal opinion.
Yeah. Personal opinion. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I am really interested to see how this product and offering overall plays out, because I can, as you've just highlighted, see that there is certainly space for it. I'm interested to see what, I guess, people's experiences are. And I'm also really interested based on the fact that, like, Sharesies have done a fantastic job in terms of getting New Zealanders more engaged with money.
Yeah.
But if you look at the last 3 years, like, we've ridden a lot of waves, right? We've had all the positive and, you know, everyone was jumping in and there was, like, high trading volumes and, like, huge amounts of volatility day-to-day in the markets that people were seeing, like, great results and kind of that fun aspect of investing through to obviously a much more recessionary environment and things overall being quite pessimistic in a lot of people's experience in the last 12 months. And so it will be interesting to see whether or not that has encouraged people to go down this path or whether it's pushed them more to the easier option of just like, I want to keep my, you know, option set low. I want to keep a choice simple between what's my goal? Is it home ownership? Is it retirement? Is that soon or is that well into the future? Therefore, am I looking at like conservative versus high growth? I've kind of got three options to think about. That's it. Set and forget and come back in 30 years. So, yeah.
I'm interested to see how this goes as well.
If people have really strongly held views on this stuff, I really would love to hear from you because I think really keen to hear if anyone maybe has thought about a way that this type of scheme could work for them that we haven't talked about or, you know, little edge cases or random things that this could really work for. I mean, one thing is that if you work in a company and you feel, and that's a listed company and you feel super strongly about, you know, investing in that company because perhaps you do have, feel like you have an inside edge into knowing the success of the business, like type of thing could give people options. But I guess then it also comes back to, well, is the place for that KiwiSaver or is the place for that just personal investment? Who knows? Questions that, you know, we're not experts. We can't answer. We can just sit here and talk about stuff.
And give our opinions.
So on that note, just a reminder that this was a friendly conversation. Please don't take anything we say as advice. Do your research. The Sharesies KiwiSaver scheme is not yet open for people to, you know, actually apply and transfer their funds over. I think they have some more information on their website and you can find out all information. Overall, I think it's really great for people to be more engaged in their KiwiSaver, particularly if you're young, you know, big asset, long time ahead. Please do a little bit of research, but don't feel you need to do all the research and do all the things. Like there is a middle ground to be found depending on your personality type. So yeah, that's all from me. Christine, over to you.
Well, I was going to wrap that up and say see you next year.
Thanks for joining us and we will see you next week.
Bye.